call to order the Government Operations Reform Technology and Elections Committee. We have before us a continuation of House File 132, so I'm going to move that House File 132 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Finance Committee. And then I think, Representative Mahoney, you had four or five amendments, and you've combined them into one, which is greatly appreciated. You want to, I'll move the A12 amendment, and we don't, do we have a quorum? We do? Well, Representative Mahoney, I'll move your amendment, and we can't vote on it until we get a quorum, but why don't you explain what your amendment does, and that would...
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My A12 amendment is a little bit different, is no different than all of them from yesterday. As you said, I just combined them. The first part of it, the general, I'll just read it and kind of explain it. The general manager of the Bioscience Business Initiative incubator facility established in 2003 is really a move to put the general manager onto this board so that there's information flowing from one to the other. The state, the city, the university has made a substantial investment in this incubator. It is a good place for businesses that grow out of the university to grow to be large enough to move into facilities and prosper on their own and create jobs in the state of Minnesota. The second one is starts on line 1.6. The governor's appointment, the governor's appointment process to the authority. It's identical to his appointment process for the Minnesota Higher Ed Facilities Authority. It brings into usage what we do as a standard appointment process, payment process, removal process for appointees to boards and commissions. It gives a little bit more definition, a little bit more control if something is right or wrong, and we have to go back and talk to people or remove people. And if someone leaves the board in midterm, it gives us the opportunity to reappoint someone else. The third piece of this is a sunset for the authority. There's really will be no need after this, after the 600,000 square feet is completed. So there's no reason to have the board if they've done their job and it's time for them to be done. The fourth and final piece clearly states the authority's reporting requirements to the legislature and to tell us that they are actually releasing the money for a building to go up. It states the date, March 1st of each year, that all the projects approved by the authority in the preceding 12 months must be reported.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Wait, we've got a quorum, so I'll renew my motion on the A12 amendment to the bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is amended. Any questions on the amendment? Representative Mahoney, does this, and this isn't critical, but does this put the bill in somewhat similar form as the Senate? Because there were significant changes in the bill in the Senate.
To be honest, I'm not sure if it does or not. Okay. I figure that will be worked out on a conference committee.
All right. Senator Rest had come over during floor session this week and given me a marked version of the Senate bill and said that there were changes, particularly to the, and it seems to be similar to what you're doing here to the board. And all right. Any other questions on the amendment? Do we have anyone that wants to testify for or against this bill? Yesterday, I think we had one individual who had said they had wanted to testify, and we'd run out of time. No? All right. Any further discussion that members have on the bill? No? So everyone is seems to be ready to just vote. Amazing what one day does to the group. Representative Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this is a bill that certainly I do support bioscience. In fact, I have a bioscience-related facility in my area in Austin, the Hormel Institute, which is growing and is creating more jobs for scientists and for professionals who will be working on cancer research. And so I think that this is something that is certainly of in the forefront of our minds as far as moving forward and trying to have bioscience and grow that in Minnesota. Unfortunately, I do not agree with the premise of the policy here on how this will be raising the dollars. So I just want to make that clear that I do support the idea of bioscience and growing that in Minnesota, but I'm a little concerned about how this would raise the dollars in order to accomplish that.
Any other questions? No. Then just one last question. Mr. Fitzenreiter could come back down. Mr. Fitzenreiter, welcome again to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record. Then I just have one more question.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Richard Fitzenreiter, the CFO and Treasurer of the University of Minnesota.
Mr. Fitzenreiter, can you explain again the impact this has on our 3%? Would you just briefly go over that? If this becomes law, how does that relate to the 3%?
Mr. Chairman, members, the bonds that are issued, the $279 million, is part of the 3% debt guideline of the state of Minnesota. However, the impact on that debt capacity, that 3% guideline, happens as each project by the authority is authorized, and they then inform the Commissioner of Finance of that particular project and the dollar amount. That's something that has been discussed with Peter Sausen in the Department of Finance, and there is agreement between the university and the Department of Finance on how the mechanics of that will impact the 3% guideline.
So, Mr. Fitzenreiter, assuming that the U would get this authority, how does it change the size of the overall bonding bill as the U moves forward?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the timing of the bonds when the authority issue them, they will either hit, as you know, the state has a debt ceiling of $975 million in the regular bonding capital years, and $135 million in the off capital budget years. And for example, in this bill, the $16.2 million that would be authorized for the first project would impact the current $135 million of debt capacity that the legislative session has before it at the current session.
So, Mr. Fitzenreiter, is it possible that when this goes into effect, it could limit the size or reduce the size of the overall bonding of the state because of projects that the U would be doing without outside of control of the legislature?
Mr. Chairman, these projects, when they're authorized by the commission, will impact the overall amount of bonds that the legislature has at its disposal in the year in which the projects are authorized.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fitzenreiter. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It just reminded me of a question that I did have for Mr. Fitzenreiter. We want to make sure that you're earning your keep, and I know you are. But, you know, we talk about debt capacity, but how about the debt service? I'm trying to better understand how the debt service goes out. If we pass this today, are we then obligating the state to spend those debt service dollars as the commission wishes? Because we do have a state share, if I understand this correctly. And therefore, those budgetary decisions are being made today versus when those bonds are actually let.
Mr. Fitzenreiter. Yeah,
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there is a fiscal note on this bill that's been prepared by the Department of Finance. I know the Finance Committee will be reviewing that. We can happily get you a copy. The Department of Finance has done a schedule that predicts when each one of these projects are authorized and the corresponding general fund debt service appropriation that will be required. That's a automatic you know, in the general fund forecast accounted for, and that's what then spills into the 3% guideline. It starts at about $2.6 million in this current biennium, and when fully implemented in around 2017, the total principal and interest payments would be about $26 million, and then that tails off because the bonds are issued for 20 years and ends at around 2036, I think.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, one of the concerns that I've had is the fact that we're not in a bonding year, and that concerns me significantly. It just seems as though, you know, when we talk about the projects and talk about the 3%, talk about the debt service, debt capacity, all those things, that to set a piece aside and have it come through in a different manner is a little difficult for me when I try to figure out how do we prioritize projects. When you look at the size and the growth of government, we often talk about health care, we often talk about education, but debt service is a significant budgetary, we're seeing significant growth, and that's a piece that concerns me as well. I guess I'll leave it there, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Representative Anderson.
Mr. Fitzenreiter, if you could stay, please. Just one question here. In your conversations with Mr. Peter Sasson with the Department of Finance, did you guys discuss how this would impact Minnesota's bond rating with the bond houses? Has the Department of Finance had conversations with the Department of Finance at all? Or
Mr. Chairman, members, as long as the projects are all accounted for within the state's 3% debt guideline, the bond houses won't have any issue. It's just like any other project that the state authorizes.
Representative Anderson? No. Any further questions? All right. Then one last time, is there anyone who wishes to testify for or against the bill? We did have an individual yesterday that requested some time. And that individual obviously isn't here today. All right, then the motion before us is to move House File 132 as amended to the Finance Committee, recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Committee.
The next bill on the agenda is House File 1. The author is, I think, taking his children to school, which is appropriate considering the bill. Do we have anyone who's on this legislation that's on the committee that could start us off here?
Mr. Chair? I'm not volunteering, but I am suggesting while we have a second that we approve the minutes from Thursday, February 15.
Good idea. Representative Morgan, what's your motion?
My motion is to approve the minutes from Thursday, February 15, 2007.
Representative Morgan moves the minutes. Any discussion? Yes. Representative Campbell.
I just have discussion of House File 768. We're on the February 15th minutes. Is that
yes.
Correct, Representative Morgan?
Sure. Yes.
I'm seeing three motions prevailing that I don't believe prevailed. I think only I believe we only voted on the third.
So, Representative Kalin, we're looking
down. I can work with staff to clarify this before we adopt that. But.
All right, so we're looking at the initial motion on the bill, and then the I understand.
I believe the general register motion certainly was withdrawn.
Yes, it was.
And so I would move to strike that paragraph. I just want to make sure that we accurately report the action.
Yeah, that would be correct. I believe you did withdraw the motion on general register because it did have to go to finance.
That's correct. And I'm just looking to the second page. About three-quarters of the way down, there were 11 ayes and 5 nays. The motion prevailed. That motion is indeed the motion you'll see about 6 or 7 lines up that Representative Kalin renewed his motion that House File 768 be recommended to pass, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing that that's the primary motion moving the bill, returning to the first page, I would move to strike the second The second motion as well, the Representative Kalin amended his motion that 768 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance, or at least striking the motion prevailed. Those three words at the end of that second paragraph, the motion prevailed. I would move to strike those as well, just to accurately reflect the action of the committee. Is that okay?
That would be correct. Thank you, Representative Kalin.
I believe it's easier, Mr. Chair, to catch these things now than to have to deal with the...
Representative Kalin, you are correct, and that's why Representative Morgan makes those motions.
And I knew that he was already catching that. He was just making sure that I could be the one to clarify.
Well, it's appropriate that it's your bill. All right. Does the Secretary have those? You do. All right. So with those changes, Representative Morgan would make his motion.
Renew
with those
my
corrections.
Motion, as amended, I guess, with the changes recommended.
With the changes recommended by Representative Kalin.
Probably as amended. But that would be fine. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Representative Morgan's motion on the minutes of, let me make sure I've got the minutes correct, February 15th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposing? Motion prevails. With that, who do we have that can testify on House File 1? I think what we'll do is have House Research come down. There are only sections of this bill that are in the purview of this committee. So why don't we have the author come down with House Research? This is right on time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative, I'm going to move House File 1 be recommended to pass, and I believe this has to go to Finance?
Yes.
All right.
Members, House File 1 is the Children's Health Security Act, and unless the Chair wants to, I'm not going to get into the details of it, but just kind of focus on generally on what it does, and then... maybe go to the amendments, and we can talk about the task force at that point. But basically, House File 1 sets up a pathway to get to coverage for all kids in Minnesota. And it does so in two phases, and I'll get into that in a little bit of detail because that relates to the task force. The first part of it sets up a program to get to cover all children up to three in families whose incomes are 300% of poverty or below. And it does that by kind of creating a pool of all kids in Minnesota, a voluntary pool, but that people would have access to. The second phase of the plan is for families, obviously, above 300% of poverty. And all we are saying with regard to that, and you can look at the language in, it is on page 2 at line 2.26 to 2.31, that our plan is to go there by 2010, but the requirements for eligibility, the form of the benefits, and all the terms and conditions of the program, how we do that, even whether it's a public program or not, will be addressed by a task force that we're setting up. And the task force language, the current language, is on page 11, 10 and 11. Although I haven't authored them.
Representative Fuse, I have before me A13.
Yes.
Would you like me to move that amendment at
like
this
that
time? And then,
sure, yeah.
All right. Members, I'm going to move A13. And why don't, do you have any changes in this amendment? Let's put this amendment in right
yes,
now
that
so
we've
got it. So
thank you.
Members, I'm going to move A13. Any discussion on that? Seeing. Why don't we get it into the bill first? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed, nay. So, Representative Thiessen, your bill is amended. And why don't you tell us about the A13 inclusion into the bill? Because this would definitely be within the purview of the committee.
Yes. Basically, what the task force would look like would be to would be six members of the House, six members of the Senate, and then six non-voting members from the public, so that we can get some kind of formal and official public input into this process. And the six groups are identified there. Some doctors' groups, the pediatrics group, the Nurses Association, so some health professionals. The plans are involved. The business partnership to get the input of employers and businesses, and the Children's Platform Coalition, which is a coalition of a number of children's groups in the state to kind of focus on the consumer side of things. And the duties of the task force are set forth on page 11, subdivision 2, on page 11, which is basically to kind of look at all the issues surrounding universal coverage for children, including how we reform and contain costs in the system, how we increase access, and particularly for preventative care, addressing health disparities, a whole variety of issues of how to get at this subject. And then there's a requirement of some recommendations coming back on December 15th, 2008.
So that's in broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Thiessen, how did you come up with the change from four majority members to from three majority members to four majority members, and holding the two minority members to two minority members? I'm just kind of curious how that change was made.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The change was made because that is more typical of what we do with these task forces. We've looked at these things in the past.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen, you know, on an issue that is not intended to be partisan, I don't think kids are partisan, it would seem to me that a more balanced approach would be certainly, I think, a good way to move this task force forward. And I think your original language had that. And I'm concerned about the change and the minority or voice or lack of minority voice that's been put forward in the amendment.
Mr. Chair,
Representatives,
this is the language that the Senate adopted. You know, I think there still is a minority voice, but I'd be open to an amendment if people feel they want to go back to three and three as well. I mean, I think there is fairness in that.
Representative Brock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if the Senate adopted it, that makes me even more concerned. Representative Thiessen, if you'd be willing to do that, that would be great.
I think it would be, three on line 1.8 instead of four?
Correct.
And three on 1.9 instead of four? And the same changes on 111 and 112.
All right. I think what we're going to do is make sure that Mr. Shepard has it, and then we're going to make sure that the minutes reflect it again. So,
yes,
Mr. Shepard, can you walk us through that change so we're clear on it?
Mr. Chair, members, and Representative Thiessen, understand the concept, it would be that there would be from each body, there would be three members of the majority and three members of the minority.
Precisely.
And as Mr. Chair, as Representative Thiessen indicated, I think it would be on page 1, line 8, to delete 4 and insert 3. Page 1, line 9, delete the 2 and insert 3. And page 1, line 11, delete 4 and insert 3. And page 1, line 12, delete 2 and insert 3.
Mr. Chair?
Representative, is that Nelson?
Yes.
Okay.
Would
Representative
also
Nelson.
On all those lines have to replace 6 with 5? Six members of the House of Representatives, if you're going to four.
Mr. Chair and
Mr. Shepard.
Representative Nelson, as I understand Representative Thiessen's intent, it would keep it at six and have three and three, even representation from minority and majority in each body.
Representative Thiessen, does that reflect
yes.
what you understand the amendment to be? And the Representative Broad, since it's your amendment, is that what you were?
Mr. Chairman, my goal was to work with Representative Thiessen, and I think actually if he's comfortable with that, that's great.
All right. Representative Hilton.
Well, Mr. Chair, now I am confused because I understood Representative Broad's amendment actually to intend to return to the original language, which was three and two, not three and three.
Representative Thiessen.
you know, I'm going to leave it up to the committee. I don't have strong feelings. I think these issues do need to have, I think we need to come to agreement on these issues. And so I'm, you know, the committee probably has more insight into what typically is done in these circumstances. But I'm comfortable with 3 and 3 as well.
All right. Representative Hilty, you look perplexed, but that's okay.
I guess what Mr. Chair, I thought that I understood the original amendment to be, you know, if that I might be inclined to amend the amendment if it is as it was read rather than as I understood it to be what I understood it to be.
Representative Hilty, that was my understanding also, but then when clarification, that's why I asked Mr. Shepherd to clarify and for the author to clarify. Clarification was different than my hearing also. So,
well, Representative Broad, what would
Representative Thiessen,
what would you think of 3 and 2? Would you be comfortable with that?
Well,
Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, now that 3 and 3 is on the table, I would be very hesitant to go back. I'd like to move 3 and 3. Actually, Mr. Chairman, I understand how things work around here. 3 and 2 is just fine.
Representative Thiessen. So, Representative Broad, what we should then do is go back. Are you changing your, or you want to withdraw your motion and have a new, let's withdraw your amendment, just for clarity's sake, and have a new amendment. How about that?
That's fine, Mr. Chairman. I don't recall actually moving that.
Oh, you don't? All right. So this was that infamous sort of nebulous twilight zone of suggestive amendments.
Right, Mr. Chairman, and we're going to be there again. Just
yeah.
So, Mr. Chairman, I will formally move the changes of 4 to 3 on lines 1.8 and then on line 1.11, 4 to 3. And then, Mr. Chairman, at that point, we would need to change on lines 1.8, 6 to 5, and on lines 1.11, 6 to 5.
All right. Mr. Shepherd, let's walk through this, because this is an amendment that's before the body. Let's walk through those changes, and then we're going to go to the author to make sure he understands what the changes are, and then we'll go into discussion.
Mr. Chair, members, just to first of all restate the concept, it would be that there would be 10 voting members, and from the House it would be 3 and 2, and the Senate 3 and 2. And if that's the case, then on page 1, line 5, delete 12 and insert 10, and on page 1, line 8, delete 6 and insert 5, and later on line 8, delete 4 and insert 3. And on page 1, line 11, delete 6 and insert 5, and later on the same line, delete 4 and insert 3. So the entire sentences would read, beginning on line 1.5, the task force shall be made up of 10 voting members and 6 non-voting members. The voting members are 5 members of the House, of whom 3 members would be appointed by the Speaker and 2 by the minority, and then the parallel change in the next clause for the Senate.
Ms. Anderson, do you have that? You have that. All right. Representative Thiessen, how about that?
I hesitate to say anything more, but I think that sounds good.
All right. So that is now the motion before. So to the amendment, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me.
I don't think I've added.
You may have a word other than nebulous for this, but what about filling in the minority side with independent? I'll pass.
All right. Thank you, Representative Olson. Representative Poppy, do you have a question?
Okay, I just wanted to make it clear that 1.5, then we also change that number, so the task force shall be made up of 10 voting number, and then the 6 non-voting stays the same. Thank you.
All right. Your Representative Poppy is clear?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
I know my coffee hasn't kicked in quite yet, but that's what I thought I heard her say in the first place. So, yeah, that sounds good.
So you're comfortable with
I'm
that,
comfortable
too?
I'm comfortable with it, too, yeah.
All right, so we're moving into from the twilight zone to the comfort zone. All right. Feeling better about it. Representative Broad, are you clear with your amendment?
Yes, sir.
All right. All those in favor of the Broad Amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Any further discussion? House File on Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Thiessen. I think that that brings a significant balance back in place. One additional concern I have with this amendment is the selection of these groups. It seems that to select these groups and put them into statute leaves all sorts of others specifically out of play. I'm wondering how you came across just these groups.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There was an interest in getting more public input and more formal public input, and there was thought put into what kind of stakeholders would there be out there. And so, you know, the thought was, well, the providers are clearly have an interest in this, and the health plans and insurance companies have an interest in this. The business community has an interest in this. Children and their families have an interest in this. And so we went to look at kind of who would be good representatives of those stakeholders, who we think would represent those interests well. From the provider side, you know, since it is children's health care, we thought the pediatricians and the nurses would make some good sense. The Council of Health Plans is fairly broad representative of that sector or that group of stakeholders. The Children's Platform Coalition is actually a very broad coalition of a variety of groups interested in children's issues. The Universal Healthcare Coalition brings a different perspective to the issue of insurance versus, you know, how we operate, how we structure the system, whether it's through a health plan system and an insurance system or through a fee-for-service type of system. And the business partnership we thought was a good representative of the business community in general. Clearly, you know, there could have been other choices within those subgroups, you know, whether it's the chamber for the business community or, you know, the MMA for the, but that's, we kind of, these folks have expressed interest in healthcare issues, have been working in the area, and that's kind of how we decided on it.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And one thing, I'm looking at this, and I always appreciate what the Minnesota Business Partnership does, because they're, I think, the top 100 largest companies in our state and are significant job providers. And so so I always appreciate what they bring to the table and what they do in our communities individually and collectively. But I'm concerned that the small business piece is left out of the puzzle. When you look at where jobs are being created, they're being created in small businesses. And so I'm wondering if it wouldn't be better to add on the NFIB or the Chamber of Commerce. Actually, 80% of the chamber's businesses are deemed to be small businesses, I believe. Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that we bring that that group into play. And I would, at this time, maybe add two members to this group, Mr. Chairman. And so I'd like to move that we change on lines 1.5, 10 to 12, back to 12. Oh, excuse me, 6 to 8, pardon me, on lines 1.6.
All right.
And then I would like to add, Mr. Chairman, after a business partnership, a seventh group, which would be the Chamber of Commerce. And then, Mr. Chairman, I would like to add an additional group. I think why don't I make the statement and then I can explain it. I would also like to add as an eighth the Citizens Council on Healthcare.
All right. Let's have Mr. Shepherd walk us through your amendment just to make sure it's understood, and then we'll discuss it. Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair and members, as I understand it, on page 1, line 6, the 6 non-voting members will be changed to 8 non-voting members. And then on page 1, line 19, the "and" would be taken out at the end of that line. And then after line 20, there would be two new lines inserted. One would be a clause 7 that would read the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And the next would be clause 8. Line 7 would say the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and then clause 8 would read the Citizens Council on Healthcare.
All right. Representative Brown, is that your amendment?
That is my amendment, right. Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Brown, you were going to explain the Citizens Council.
Right. I was just in listening to the rationale for the Universal Healthcare Coalition, in regards to a fee-for-service or insurance-type discussions, I think that they definitely would provide an alternative viewpoint that I think benefits everybody. It's nice when you have alternative viewpoints at the table. I like to bring them to this committee all the time, Mr. Chairman, but I think that they would add significantly to that discussion.
Representative Broad, there's a question that's come up on the Citizens Council on Healthcare. Is that the formal name of the group? Or is there a...
Mr. Chairman, I believe it is. It's the CCHC, and I believe that's the formal name.
All right. Unless I see Representative Olson's nodding his head, and Representative Kahn isn't, so Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd like to know something. I'm new to looking at this issue, and I guess I'd like to know something about that group. And I'd like to know what these two additions add to the list of people, the list of groups that we already have that's missing.
All right, Representative Kahn, the two groups are the Chamber of Commerce.
I understand what that is. It's and the second one I haven't heard
it's
of.
It's the second one. Representative Broad, is there someone here from that group that could come down today?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know because I actually haven't talked to them. I just, when I listened to Representative Thiessen's explanation for the Universal Health Care Coalition being involved, that group was brought to mind. The mission of that group is to enable individual control and health care decisions by supporting free market principles. I just think that they've been a great resource and a significant participant in health care discussions in the state. And again, I think it's nice to have people asking why, people asking how, providing just another blend into the discussion.
All right, Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not to that issue, but more generally, if I could, the six groups, I think, at some point, the size of the group becomes unworkable. I think that the Chamber or the Minnesota Business Partnership would bring a business perspective if the committee feels more strongly that the Chamber ought to replace the Minnesota Business Partnership. I would certainly be open to that discussion. The Citizens Council on Healthcare is really Twyla Braes. I honestly don't know if there's anything more to the group than her. I'm not sure that that's the best choice. In addition, I mean, if the issue is the fee-for-service model versus a health plan or insurance or private market model, I mean, the Council on Health Plans have a very strong interest in continuing, I would imagine, their position in all of this and operating this through managed care and operating this through a private market system. I think they do bring that perspective. So I think all the viewpoints that would be brought forth by these additions are already represented among the six. So I would oppose this amendment.
All right. Thank you. Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. And I think some of the doctors in my district who are actually members of the CCHC would be in opposition to your statement that it's just Twyla Braes. Twyla is oftentimes these groups have front people here at the Capitol while their membership are back working in our communities. And so Twyla has been obviously testified in front of a variety of committees, but if it was just her, I think this organization it would be much different. She's backed up by a number of people within all of our communities. In regards to the number and making sure that we're not having a committee, I agree with you. I think sometimes you get committees that are too large. I would remind the committee that we just, by adopting my original amendment, dropped the size of the committee by two, and all I'm doing is putting it back to the number at which we started. So if it was good starting out with 12 voting members and 6 non-voting members in the original piece of the amendment, we've now moved to 10 voting members. All I'm trying to do is bring in 8 non-voting members. And again, I'm not a math genius, but it certainly brings us back to even.
All right. I've got a list of people. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Thiessen. The Minnesota Council of Health Plans and the Universal Health Care Coalition, those two seem to be very similar to me in the respect that they're both strong proponents of managed care, and in the case of, well, depends on how you define it.
But okay.
Pardon?
That's not right at all, but that's okay.
Well, I'll certainly welcome your correction, but like I said, it depends on how you define it. The I guess the point I'm striving to make is that I don't really see anyone here really representing citizens. And that, I think, is the point of the Citizens Council on Healthcare. It is not just Twyla Briggs. And I don't think we should marginalize the group by speaking about the spokesperson, who does a very good job around here in raising these points and concerns that have been raised. It is structured with a board, and there's much more to the organization than there may appear to be, at least from your vantage point. But there isn't anybody here that really represents citizens. And that's what that organization really does represent, individual citizens and free market principles. The connection that I'm really trying to make with the Council of Health Plans and the Universal Healthcare Coalition, they really don't promote free market principles, which is what our country is really based upon. So I think this is very skewed without this amendment.
Representative Olson, there are members of the legislature on there who are elected by citizens, but moving on to Representative Oltrager.
Thank you. Chair, members, Representative Broad, I supported your last amendment because you were actually reducing the committee. I'm opposed to this, and I support Representative Thiessen on this. Let's not try and add to sink the ship here.
Mr. Chairman, let me be clear. I'm not adding to sink the ship. I'm adding to provide balance, and I'm adding to provide an alternative viewpoint in a group that I think is going to do some very important work should this bill go forward. It's not about that. It's about making sure that there's all sorts of voices at the table to talk about issues that are nonpartisan basis. Kids are nonpartisan. That's what I'm trying to do.
Representative Kahn.
Well, I respond to that.
No. Representative Wolfshanger, okay. Go ahead. Yes, you certainly may. Let's have her respond.
Thank you, Chair, members, Representative Broad. I made my point. I don't know what you were doing there, but I don't need it. Thanks.
Representative Kahn. And all right. Anyone else on the amendment? On the Broad Amendment. All right. Then all those in favor of the Broad Amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Representative Thiessen.
I have nothing further.
You have anyone that wishes to testify to those elements of the bill that are before us, the task force or the amendment?
I don't, no? Mr. Chair.
Members, any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Someone said, Representative Kahn.
I have a question. It's not really on the issue that is before, but I'm a little concerned about this swear that you're going to be a permanent resident of Minnesota. In terms of how that affects students, and particularly, I guess the answer you're going to say is that you could just say you're going to be, but suppose you're a student in a theological seminary and you feel very strongly that what you say has to be the absolute truth. How would you ever make that affidavit?
Representative Kahn, you want to point to...
It's in residency, at end of page 2, subdivision 3.
Mr. Chairman?
Let's just wait one second here until we
find
out
I'm not concerned with all of the requirements, you know, but I think the to be eligible, an applicant must demonstrate the requisite, the one about the affidavit, 310 to 312, intends to reside in the state permanently is the problem. I don't know how I don't think I could have done that at any point in my life. You know, maybe not even now.
Representative, let's let Representative Thiessen address that first so he can explain why that's there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn. This is this is basically putting status quo into law for Minnesota care, and that so the language is taken from there.
I mean,
Representative Kahn.
And certainly, just again, taking myself as an example, neither of my children reside in the state, so I don't know how. I don't know what, and I'm sure they didn't, or we didn't know that when they were of the age that this would occur. So I just, you know,
Chair,
it's old language. I, I guess there's nothing we can do about it.
Representative
Teasley. I think it's unrealistic.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think what you're swearing to is your current intent to stay in the state. You're not saying, I intend to permanently stay in the state forever. You've moved here, and your intent right now is that you're going to stay in the state. So okay. I think there's a different thing, I think.
Well, then okay. Take out permanently. Mr. Chairman, then take out the word permanent. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't want to apply ultra-rigorous linguistic standards, but to me, permanently means something other than intent to reside in the state.
Representative Thiessen, you did say that this is language that's also in Minnesota Care?
I believe that's the case, yes.
All right, I see Mr. House Research shaking their head in the affirmative on that. So, Representative Emmer.
Well, I'm sorry, Chairman Pawlowski, but I was trying to get clarification to follow Representative Kahn's question because I thought that the intent of human beings is to tell the truth. I didn't know there was something less than the absolute truth, and I guess that's more of a statement. Maybe we'll have that philosophical discussion some other time.
I think we agree.
Representative Kahn.
I hate to say that I think Representative Emmer and I agree. I'm just saying that I thought that this was an unrealistic standard for someone who was intent on telling the truth.
But hate is a very strong word, yes. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahlen, I don't think we want to prolong, although it is significant. No. I would say historic, but that's bantered around a lot.
We're pulling her in the right direction, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, I'm still on the amendment. Is that okay if we go back to the amendment?
Representative Broad, I would appreciate that. Yes, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the addition of another group on line 1. I guess Mr. Shepard can deal with this. I'm looking for a seventh edition of the non-voting members, two private individuals chosen by the governor.
All right. Representative Brown, why don't you repeat that for Mr. Shepard slowly. You're looking for a seventh edition, and it would be two private individuals chosen by the governor?
Correct.
Mr. Shepard, let's explain how that fits in.
Mr. Chair, members, as I understand it, Representative Broad's amendment would be on page 1, line 6, to delete 6 and insert 8, and then on page 1, line 19, to delete the word and. On page 1, line 20, before the period, insert a semicolon and then a new clause 7 that would read two private individuals appointed by the governor.
Ms. Anderson, you have that?
In common.
Yeah.
Is everyone clear on what she's doing and where this amendment is going to go? And Representative Broad, this is an amendment. You're moving that.
Yes, sir.
All right. So this is not a suggestion. It's an amendment, just to be clear. Representative Thiessen, you want to respond to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the two things that I would say would be, again, to try to keep the task force manageable, and I think we've created somewhat of a balance of the different stakeholders among these six, and this is a legislative task force, primarily set up for the legislature by the legislature, and so I would oppose the amendment. All right.
To the amendment. Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, let me explain why I'm doing this. Again, what we're trying to do is get back to the numbers that were brought in the original amendment, and this does that. And if you notice, I did have these two being non-voting members, not voting members, because I do understand it's a legislative task force. But I do think that it's important to have the administrative branch and the executive branch kind of blended into these discussions. They're very relevant to what's going on in terms of health care overall. And these two partners, the executive branch and the legislative branch, have to work together to implement anything that comes out going forward. And so it just makes sense to me, as we try to get the right people and a good balance in place, that we bring them in a manner such that they're private individuals. I'm not talking about having gubernatorial staff. But let's bring in a couple additional people who can have the executive piece of the puzzle. When you look at a lot of the legislative groups that we do put forward or task forces, we oftentimes do have people from the different branches that are relevant. So, Mr. Chairman, I would appreciate the committee's votes on this.
Further discussion to the amendment? Seeing no further discussion, All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail.
Mr.
Chair. To the amendment or to the bill? Representative Hill.
Just looking at the amendment, what the amendment did is delete, among other things, the statement on lines 11.3 and 11.4 that say task force members must be appointed by September 1st, 2007. So there's Representative Thiessen, did you mean to have that eliminated, or do you want to put that back in?
Representative Thiessen, before we go to Representative Thiessen, I want to go to Mr. Shepard. Mr. Shepard, is that...
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. It is in. It's in a different place.
I didn't think we had done that. But, so, all right. Any further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Thiessen, I'm looking on page 2, starting at line 26. It's in section number 6. And just talking about eligibility, I was just curious here. You've got the line that says effective July 1st, 2010. Essentially, any child, regardless of income, would be able to access this program. Does this mean I'm going to pick on Representative Nelson here a little bit? Say his salary was $1 million a year. Does this mean that his children would be eligible to receive? It's your lucky day today. So would this mean that essentially his children would be able to have state paid for health care?
Representative,
No, it doesn't. And I think if you read the next sentence, that's what this task force is for, to determine what the requirement, no and or maybe, I guess, would be the question. If the task force decides that is a course that we want to pursue, then yes, that would be the case. But this certainly doesn't say that, and the requirements for eligibility, so it may be that someone making $1 million would not be eligible in the form of the benefits and those other terms and conditions. That's what the task force is for.
Representative Thiessen, and can you clarify for me, does that mean that the task force is the one that is going to be setting up these guidelines completely? Is it out of the hands of the legislature, or do they have to come back to the legislature for approval? I missed that somewhere.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. They absolutely have to come back to the legislature for approval.
Okay.
Yes.
Representative Anderson, that's why this committee and these task forces tend to be important. How they're set up and what they do does have a dramatic impact on legislation. So your point is extremely well taken as to why this bill is here and why we're discussing this. Representative Anderson, I believe, had a follow-up.
Well, I guess my concern is that after looking now in that light of things, when you're looking at what Representative Broad was trying to do in adding some different groups to this membership, I think that as a committee, we should be looking at that a little bit more carefully, especially with the task that is presented before them, that we really need to have more careful consideration of that. I mean, they have a big job to do, and especially when they're going to be establishing who's going to qualify for this down the road beyond the 300% threshold.
Well, and Representative, Mr. Chair, I think that what's important here is I don't think that that's quite it. I think the task force is going to make recommendations, and that's what the language of the bill says. And then it says, in the section you were reading from, the requirements for eligibility, the form of benefits, and other terms and conditions of the program must be determined by the legislature, which is us, after receiving the report of the legislative task force. So we certainly have, it's certainly residing with the legislature.
Representative Emmer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, we had this discussion in a different committee.
Which is maybe where it should have been. Okay.
Well, I'm going to make the same motion to amend it again today, because you've stated in both committees now what your intent is, but the language, sir, does not evince that intent. At line 2.27, I'm going to move that we change the word must to may. Because, in fact, sir, if you read at line 2.28, the requirements for eligibility, the form of the benefits, and other terms and conditions of the program are what will come back to the legislature. But in that first sentence, you specifically have drafted this to require that all children, regardless of income, must be included in this government health program. So I'm going to move that we change the word must to may so that it follows more closely with your stated intent, which is it's something that may be considered.
All right. Members, I'm going to go to Mr. Shepherd again, and just for clarity, Mr. Shepherd, explain the amendment for us. And this is an amendment he's proposing.
Mr. Chair and members, as I understand Representative Emmer's amendment on page 2, line 7, it would delete the word must and insert may so that that first sentence would say that 2.27, excuse me, that children and families with incomes in excess of 300% may be included.
Mr. Shepherd, can you explain the difference legislatively or legally to the extent that you are able of those two words, may and must?
Mr. Chair and members, as I understand, if this bill were enacted with the must, it would say that the people described there come 2010, if no other laws were enacted, must would be included. And under Representative Emmer's change, if that were adopted and no other changes were enacted in law between now and then it would read that they may be included, but they wouldn't necessarily have to be.
All right. So, Mr. Shepherd, there is a significant difference in the use of those two words in the intent of this legislation.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, I think it's fair to say it's a significant difference.
All right. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I would have a somewhat of a different take on this than Representative Emmer has. And we did discuss this in the Healthcare Committee fairly extensively. Really, the reason for this, for having this line in there and the must in there, is structural for this legislature. What this is saying is we are going to do something. We're going to kind of get at this issue and resolve it by 2010. What that looks like, as the rest of that section shows, is up to the legislature and up to this task force to meet some of those recommendations. But by changing the may to must, we're going to be putting in law something that we often do around here, which is we'd like to get there, but we never necessarily do. This puts in a structural deadline for us to actually get this done. What it's going to look like, I think if you actually read the language, it doesn't necessarily have to be the same thing here as what's going to be for under 300% of poverty, but I think it really is important that we give ourselves a deadline and we put something in place saying this is what we are going to do.
Representative Emerson, to your amendment.
Thank you. Very, very briefly. And Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, thank you, because that's the most clear statement that I've heard from you in the last two committees. Because we did have this very discussion, and frankly, Representative Anderson asked you a question that you answered somewhat along the same lines, but it suggested to someone who's not clearly in detailed familiarity with your proposal, it suggested that the legislature will get another bite at this apple. Now you have phrased it in terms of a structural matter for the legislature. In fact, members, what this is the proposal is saying that we will have government health care no matter what. The only thing that's going to be left for a future legislature, again, is what that next part of the subpart C refers to, which is the form of the benefits, etc. So let's be clear that under the example that Representative Anderson gave you, in fact, regardless of whether Representative Nelson makes $1 million or probably more closely to $5 million a year, his kids would be covered regardless, just like some of us that make 30 or less a year.
Representative Thiessen.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Emmer, again, I would respectfully disagree with your position. And I think I have been saying the same thing all along, and I did talk about the structure in the last committee as well. The language requirements for eligibility, I mean, that is who is eligible. And this task force could say, we're not going to have people eligible that are making $1 million because we don't need that to get coverage for all children. I mean, the language is right there, and we can ignore the language if you want and read it the way you want to, but In fact, what this program looks like is up to the task force and a future legislature.
Mr. Chairman, I'm done. I would just add, because obviously Representative Thiessen and I have a difference, but based on what Representative Thiessen just said, if it doesn't matter, then he should be supporting my amendment for the word may.
Representative Braun, to the amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, while the lawyers talk back and forth, I'm just going to ask Mr. Shepard a question. Mr. Shepard, I'm trying to understand how these sentences stack up, because I do read in 2.27 that children must be included. So I'm wondering if we're setting up a difficulty for this legislative task force if they come forward with what is suggested on lines 2.28, requirements for eligibility. It seems to me that that's in conflict with that previous statement. So is the statement that comes last the driving force, or is the statement that comes first the driving force? Because those two seem to be in conflict.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, and I would certainly haven't worked on this part of the bill and would yield the author would probably explain it better than I can, but I think as I read this, this entire paragraph assumes that the task force will make some recommendations and that additional legislation is going to be enacted before 2010, and that then the words included that you cited on line 2.27 would mesh up with eligibility in the form of the benefits when the subsequent legislation were enacted. That would be how I would see it working.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if I understand, then from a construction standpoint, then these sentences are not taken separately, they're taken together. Is that how I'm understanding that? They're taken as a paragraph? I mean, I'm just trying to understand how those two sentences which are in conflict are looked at together.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, and again, I don't want to misstate the intent of the author of the bill, but as I understand it, the way that I would read the two sentences together is that the second sentence assumes that the legislature will subsequently enact legislation that will determine the requirements for eligibility, the benefits, and other terms that would then modify how the people would be included as provided in the first sentence.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe this is just more of a comment. I guess I'm not sure how the courts look at these sentences. Do they look at them separately? Do they look at them together? If they look at them separately, then if I did not fit in those eligibility categories that came out from that legislative task force, I would look at the first part of that sentence and say, well, heck, I sure should be covered. That's just more of a comment. I'm just not sure how you separate the two.
Representative Brown, I believe the lawyers are explaining that for us now. Representative Thiessen, do you have a...
No, Mr. Chair. And, I'm willing to work with Representative Emmer on this language to make him more comfortable. I think we have maybe a difference of opinion about how this reads, and maybe a difference of opinion about what we should be doing. But I think it is... My intent is that we have the structure in place that we're going to have this pathway in place to figure out how we're going to make sure the kids, because there are kids over 300% of poverty who are in families and they're not covered by health insurance. It's a much smaller group, obviously, but we should have in place a legislative position that we're going to get there. How we get there is going to be left to the task force. And if there's different language that we can, if there is confusion among members, I'm happy to work with them.
Morgan, to the amendment.
I actually think I'll pass, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Volson, to the amendment. To the amendment.
Yeah, thank you, right. Mr. Chair. Representative Thiessen, if I understand this correctly, the first sentence does confirm that there would be coverage in the scenario that Representative Anderson highlighted. And as we all know, we can't bind future legislatures. But yet in this circumstance, with the task force and the goal set for 2010, it appears to me that this is a predetermined outcome that the task force is commissioned to make a report to fulfill. And the legislature would then have to determine whether or not they will enact what is recommended by their report. Is that correct?
Representative Thiessen.
The last part is correct. It was too long a sentence for me to process this early in the morning. So that last part is correct, that the basically what's happening, to try to restate it more clear, what this provision is attempting to do is say, what this whole provision, I guess, is attempting to do, we're going to cover up to 300% kids and families up to 300% of poverty under this structure that is laid out in this bill. There's this other group of people that are in families above 300% of poverty. What the legislature is saying, if this bill passes, is that we are going to figure out a way to make sure that there's coverage available to the children and families above 300% of poverty who don't currently have it, and look at better ways maybe to provide coverage to the rest, whether that is a market solution or some other solution. But we're saying we're going to do that by 2010. What that looks like, the second sentence, is going to be left to this task force and then this legislature coming back in 2009. That session.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson.
Representative Thiessen, I believe that's the same thing I just said. The
yes,
predetermined outcome, as I called it, is the first sentence, that children must be included in this security program above 300%, but that does include all of those referenced in the example by Representative Anderson, and that will be considered. And that's why I would support the amendment of Representative Emmer to make it permissive, because I don't believe we need to go there. I don't believe that's necessary. And permissive language, I think, would leave the task force with more flexibility to mitigate the issues highlighted by Representative Anderson's example and highlighted, actually, by your response to it as well.
Representative Teason.
And Mr. Chair, I guess the last thing I would say is I do think if there's a family that's making $1 million and they're leaving their kids uninsured, we should try to come up with a way to figure out maybe what the best way to encourage that family to get their kid insured, and whether that is a private market solution, which for someone making $1 million very well might be. You know, I think that's something worth looking at.
All right. Members, before us is the Emmer Amendment on line 2.27, changing the word must to may. I think we've exhausted the possibilities here. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, nay.
No.
No.
Motion does not prevail. The bill as amended is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 1 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay.
No.
The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Thiessen.
Members.
Members, we are not going to have a committee meeting tomorrow, which will give folks a little break, but I anticipate next week could be fully loaded. So be prepared. With that, meeting is adjourned.